Good afternoon, everybody. This is Robin Ayoub from the Localization Fireside Chat, and welcome to another recording. Today, recording, I think episode number 6 today, but overall, we're recording, I think, up to 227 or 228 episodes, so don't quote me on this one. For the past few weeks, I've been a podcasting machine, to be honest with you. It's been going crazy, which I really appreciate the guests that comes along and share their stories with the channel, with the audience. And at the same time, I want to thank the audience for listening in and the guest, especially my guest today, Bobby Casey. We'll get to know Bobby in a second here. And I want to welcome Bobby to the Localization Fireside Chat. And thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. I know everybody's busy and taking time for these podcasts. Sometimes it's not easy, but I really appreciate you being with me.
Well, thanks for having me today, Robin. I do appreciate the opportunity to get on here and have a chat with you and also, you know, maybe share something interesting for your audience.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure. And I hear it quite often. Every guest that came along here and did share their stories, I hear immediately the comments back to me through, you know, one-on-one or in public comments. People are saying that how much they got out of it. Not every story is going to be applicable to 100% of the people, but story will be applicable to some people. Yeah. It depends on the topic we're talking about. And so,
by the way, I wanted to drop one thing real quick because I just noticed myself on the camera.
Sure. Would you like to change the lighting?
No, it's fine. Oh. I have this wristband on, which to me looks a little funny. Like I just went to the nightclub or something, but
that's okay.
I have to wear this thing. I'm in Puerto Vallarta for the past couple weeks, and I'm in like a really high-end secure building. Okay. And you have to have a wristband to get in and out of this building. Sure. And so I just noticed, I'm like, oh, wow, I still have this wristband on. So
yeah,
I'm not a party person. This is not me going to a nightclub last night.
Don't worry about it. We have a very cool audience. Don't worry about it. I wouldn't worry about it too much.
All right.
So today, I think are you still there?
I'm here. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Today, I think the topic is going to be for us, and that's what I would like to discuss with Bobby. First, we're going to get to know Bobby, get to know his story. And then we're going to dive into a few things. One is businessanywhere.io, which is a business that Bobby started, and also global wealth protection. We're going to talk a little bit about this one. And I saw something, I'm not sure if related to you, but I don't know, I got into it, but I haven't had a chance to dig deeper into it, which draw my eyes to it. It's called Linktree Tax Jesus or something like this. I'm not sure if this is related to you or not.
It is. That's my Linktree. That's my Linktree profile. Yep.
All right. And also Business Anywhere, which is very, very interesting as well. We're going to get to know all these items that Bobby has been working on. And as if you have guessed it already, this is about doing business anywhere, being able to protect what you have and move around the world, move around the globe. And very timely conversation to everybody, the localization industry and the knowledge-based industry in general. Like, it doesn't matter which economy you're part of. If you are a part of the knowledge-based industry, meaning you're a creative worker, you're a translator, you're an editor, whatever you are, you're an engineer, you're a software engineer, you're a technical person doing remote work for people, you might have contemplated perhaps moving around, leaving your country, moving to another country, enjoying the sunshine. I don't care. And I don't know what you're in the mood for as your ultimate plan. But this conversation is important, very important to somebody who is thinking about moving around from a business perspective or on an individual level to see how are you going to arrange all this stuff? How are you going to bring all the pieces together? Now, Bobby's an expert at this, has been doing this for a while, and I can't wait to get into this story. So let's get into it. Welcome again, Bobby. Appreciate it. Thanks for being with me. One question that everybody gets on this channel, I guess, to get us going, the story question. What got you here? What's the origin story? Where are you from? How did you come up with this idea? What got you here?
Sure. Yeah. So I grew up in a really entrepreneurial family. My grandpa, actually, he had retired by the time I was born, but in his earlier years, had a chain of restaurants. My dad had a construction company. So I was kind of raised in that entrepreneurial environment. I never never had that, grow up and get good grades, go to a good college, get a good job and retire in 40 years with a gold watch kind of mindset. Never had that. For me, it was always about what business am I going to run? Like, even as a kid, teenage kid, I'm always like looking at things like, how can I do that? How can I do that better? How can I combine things and build a business out of this? Like, I've never actually had a real job. When I say a real job, I mean, I had jobs as a kid, but like, I never had a professional job. I've never done that. I've always had my own company. And so having my own companies, like even from my teens, I had a company that I started when I was 20 or 21 maybe, that did really well. And then in my late 20s, I went to somebody like me, basically, who does a similar type thing to what I do now. And I just, at that time, I had one business that was doing well. I owned another restaurant. I had like a bunch of real estate projects and stuff going. So I had a lot going on in my late 20s. And I went to somebody like me and said, hey, look, I need to protect my assets. I need to get this structure properly done to protect me and maybe minimize taxes and take advantage of some things like that. Anyway, through the process of working with him, I loved it. I loved the process working with him. I loved it. It was like solving a puzzle. And to me, it was fascinating. And he kind of became a mentor of mine for a while. Actually, we still are in contact once in a while now. But I went to him and I said, look, I got a bunch of friends, like, because all my friends were entrepreneurs. I mean, then and now, I don't really have friends with jobs. Even the couple of friends I do that, the couple of friends I do have that have jobs, they work fully remotely and they're like high-end executives that work fully remote. Because like, I'm the kind of guy that'll call you up and be like, hey, let's go ride motorcycles on Thursday. And so like people with normal jobs, they can't do that. Actually, the whole reason I'm here in Puerto Vallarta, this is a great example of this. The whole reason I'm here in Puerto Vallarta was 2 weeks ago, a buddy of mine was having some problems. He was having some issues and like kind of in a bad headspace. And I called him up and I said, hey man, let's me and you get together and do a 2 week side quest. That's what I call it. Let's go do a 2 week side quest somewhere. Like literally like right at 2 weeks ago. I said, I called him up. I said, let's go do a side quest somewhere. Let's travel. And he's like, where do you want to go? And I'm like, listen, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a couple of options and you pick. And I said, okay, let's go to either Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, or Medellin, Colombia, or Puerto Vallarta in Mexico. And he goes, all right, let's go to Puerto Vallarta. So literally in like a 2 or 3 day window, him and I booked an Airbnb for 2 weeks, bought plane tickets, and showed up in Puerto Vallarta with like a 2 day notice. So that's the whole reason I'm here, is hanging out with a buddy of mine that we just did this little side quest. And so I don't have friends that live normal lives. I have friends that can be like, sure, let's go to Mexico in 2 days, or let's go to Rio in 2 days. So that was the whole thing. And back then, all my friends, kind of the same, they're all business owners. And I went to my quote mentor and I said, hey, I got some other friends that are business owners. Why don't I work with you? Because I really like this process and I want to learn it. How about you train me on this and I work with you and we can share some money here? And he goes, perfect, let's do that. So for the next couple of years, that was my like quote side gig while I was running another company and a restaurant and real estate, because you know, that's how entrepreneurs are. We just need something to do, right?
Of course.
So that's kind of how it got started. Over the next few years, I basically sold my restaurant. I sold the real estate stuff. I sold that company. And that was around 2008 or 9. And I said, look, I need something like to do. And I kind of like doing my side gig, like my consulting. And that's what became Global Wealth Protection. At that time, that's what became Global Wealth Protection, which I formalized around 2008 or 9. And I basically doing exactly that. Like I work with clients on asset protection planning, tax optimization strategies, residency planning, that sort of thing. Like for me, a typical client could be, you know, a Canadian who moves to Europe and wants to optimize for taxes. And so we have a series of calls. We figure out how to exit the Canadian tax system. We figure out where and how to register the company so that it creates the most optimized structure for whatever their plan is or where they're going to go live. Like, that's a normal client for me, or an American with an e-commerce store and selling on Amazon who lives in Thailand, or a German with a software company who lives in Argentina, or an Italian person, you know, with a consulting business who actually doesn't live anywhere, who just travels all the time. So that's normal for me. And then over the years, doing that with Global Wealth Protection, I was referring people out to other partners, like a trust company here, a virtual mailbox company here, company formation here, and so on. And actually what happened was, I'm like, I'm actually kind of tired of referring people to all these other businesses. So I started them. So I started all those companies too. And Business Anywhere is one of those. And now that's my bigger company with most of my focus. I still do the Global Wealth Protection, but I don't do any marketing or anything. I get referrals, or I don't know, somebody hears me on a podcast and finds me online and says, hey, can you help me? But we don't do any marketing or anything like that. But we're pretty heavily involved in the Business Anywhere. And Business Anywhere, just kind of the evolution of that. We still do some one-on-one coaching for clients there who need like tax strategy and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But predominantly we do the U.S. company formation, registered agent service. We do virtual mailbox, bank account opening, bookkeeping, tax filings. Basically everything you need, all your compliance stuff for startups and stuff like that. And it's ironic. People don't really ask. It's one of those things you don't know the question to ask unless you know like the answer to it. You know what I mean? And so people say, well, why did you, if you deal with mostly like, because like in our consulting business, like mostly we deal with people, entrepreneurs or freelancers who live outside of their home country or have business outside of their home country. So we have clients all over. I mean, we got clients in probably 100 or more countries at this point. And people say, why did you focus on doing company formation in the U.S.? And actually the reason is the U.S. is by far in 95% of people's situations, the best place to register your company, regardless of nationality and regardless of where you live. In most cases, in my niche of people, like the people that live outside of their home country or have business outside of their home country, because it's easier to optimize, tax optimize for a U.S. company than it is for others, especially if you're a non-U.S. person. So that's kind of how it happens. I tried to condense that because I know we're on a podcast, so I tried
that's
to
not,
squeeze
that's
it.
Not small. There's many items to unpack in here. So
I know, but that's about the best I could do, Robin.
That's okay.
I apologize.
No, oh my God, you don't have to apologize. That's perfect. That's what we wanted. Now, one of the things that you describe yourself as is unapologetic capitalist. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, well, I think nowadays, like especially the past several years, we've got this anti-capitalism movement that people are like, oh, I hate capitalism and capitalism's the end of the world and all that stuff.
Actually, I was just talking to somebody today. He quoted Marxism to me.
Oh, gross.
I was just like, I couldn't believe it.
Like, bro, if you're quoting Karl Marx to me, it better be because you're
opposing the idea, not pro idea.
You better be opposing Karl Marx if you're quoting Marx to me. Jesus.
I just can't believe it.
Oh my God. Yeah, that's anyway. Mind blowing. Yeah, but I'm very like, but I think people have a very skewed view of what capitalism really is. So, for example, people think Canada or the U.S. is a capitalist country right now. We are definitely not a capital. Like the U.S. and Canada are definitely not capitalist countries. We're what I call it cronyism, but people call it late stage capitalism, whatever you want to call it. But capitalism really is like fundamentally capitalism is free market capitalism, where I've got tomatoes, Robin, you've got apples. I want apples, you want tomatoes. We somehow figure out how to trade, right? Okay. Maybe we use a medium of exchange called money. Maybe we just trade. We figure out 5 apples is worth 10 tomatoes or whatever. But that's capitalism. That is the most pure form of human interaction. It is human nature. Capitalism is human nature. And people try to put all these wrappers around things But usually what happens is when you do things to violate human nature is when you start getting in trouble and you start creating problems. And cronyism violates human nature because it creates an
dependency, well, first of all, isn't it?
It creates dependency. It also creates friction in productivity. And it also creates an unfair advantage. Like, for example, like, Robin, you and I own a small business, right? But small or mid-sized, whatever you want to call it. But we're probably in a smaller scale of when you start thinking about cronyism. Neither one of us have the power or the ability to affect government policy and get laws changed in our company's favor, right?
Too small. And
we're too small. We don't, you know, we're not the CEO of Halliburton or the CEO of United Healthcare, or like we're not the CEO of RBC where we can call up and get special privileges. That's cronyism. That's absolutely right. Crony. It's not capitalism. Right. In that scenario, like you get rules and regulations that's detrimental to small businesses because you've got big businesses that are trying to crush small businesses. It's not capitalism. It's not me trading my wares for your wares. And so I'm very much an unapologetic capitalist, but I am absolutely not pro crony capitalism or late stage capitalism, I think is the cool term the cool kids are using nowadays.
I want to ask you a question on the community that you described, that mobile community or the community that wanting to become mobile and, you know, move from one country to another. How big is this community, A? And B, you probably know Andrew Henderson, right, from Nomad Capital. Do you know him? What's the take there?
Do you really want me to give you an Andrew Henderson conversation? I mean, this is a recorded podcast.
You know, whatever you're comfortable with, I want to make sure that we're not, I don't want to put you in a place. I'm comfortable if you are. It doesn't matter to me.
I'm comfortable going all in, but it's your podcast.
Go ahead, go all in then.
Yeah. Andrew Henderson's a scam artist. I mean, he's full on scam artist. I wouldn't trust him with anything. I know Andrew Henderson personally. He came and interviewed me years ago before he started Nomad Capitalist. He came and interviewed me because, I mean, presumably, like, I didn't know he was starting Nomad Capitalist. He actually flew to come meet me and ask me a bunch of questions and whatever. First of all, he's extremely weird in person. He's socially very awkward. He is extremely rude to me. You know, there's like little things when you're with somebody and their behaviors and nuances and you can kind of pick up on. Well, like one time, we're at a restaurant and he yells at the waitress we were in Europe. He yells at the waitress for not giving him a free cup of water. Well, in Europe, you don't really they sell bottled water. They don't do tap water.
Yeah, that's normal.
And he got really angry and yelled and basically made this girl cry, which I thought was exceptionally rude. I don't like the guy at all. I know who his funding business partner is. Who's one of the most unethical lawyers I've ever met in my life. I mean, he's a scam artist. He's a full-on scam artist. Like, I've had to fix so many problems he's made. Like, I had a client a few years ago who came to me. He paid her an ungodly amount of money to give her a strategy on what to do. She was Canadian, by the way. And he paid her a stupid, like, 25 grand or something to come up with a strategy. And it was nothing more than, like, a 10 or a 15 page written report. It included no implementation. It was $25,000 to get on a couple of calls and write up a report for her.
Wow.
And like line by line, so basically what happened is she paid for the report. I mean, she was very well off, very successful e-commerce business. She was based out of,
She paid him 25.
Yeah. That's his fee.
Oh, wow.
That's his fee for that. And, she read the report and felt a little uneasy with it. And so a friend of hers recommended me and said, hey, you should probably at least talk to Bobby and have him review that plan.
Yeah.
So that's what we started off doing is I reviewed the plan. We literally on a Google Meet call, we did a multi-screen thing.
Sure.
I opened up the Canadian tax website, like the CRA website. There's a page for exiting Canada, like, it tells you the step-by-step things you need to do to exit Canada. It's not hard to find. Like, it's literally
it's there.
On on the Canadian government's website, and we opened up his report on one screen, the Canadian government website on the other, and we went line by line by his recommendations on exiting Canada.
Yeah,
every single line was factually incorrect comparing to what was blatantly obvious public information on the Canadian website. And everything else he recommended was upselling her on more things. And if she would have implemented everything in addition to the 25, she would have had to have paid, well, all in, I guess, because one of the things he said she had to have was second citizenship in Antigua. And so all in, she was going to be about $250,000 or $300,000 in investment to do what he recommended.
Who is his customers? This is crazy.
And so we went through the plan, and I'm like, we went through the checklist. I'm like, wrong. Like, literally, I'm telling you, like, we're on a dual screen thing here. We put her plan or his plan on one screen, Canadian government on the other screen, and I just like marked it. I'm like, this is wrong. Here's the Canadian government website. See, it's wrong. This is wrong. Okay. We went through it anyway, all in with, we ended up implementing everything for her, and all in, I think she paid $5,000 or $6,000 total to do everything she needed to do to exit the Canadian tax system and restructure her business in such a way that she didn't have to pay Canadian tax anymore. And then she basically became nomadic. So yeah, I'm not a big fan of Andrew Henderson. I think he does a great job marketing his YouTube channel.
Yeah, that's what I was going to talk about. Yeah. The his image YouTube channel is different.
His YouTube channel is really good. They do a good job of that. To be fair, though, a lot of the stuff he puts on YouTube is factually incorrect. But from a marketing standpoint, it does really well. Like, to be honest, I've had people tell me, like, you literally should make a YouTube channel that does nothing but shoot down Andrew Anderson. I'm like, I don't have time for that. Like, I don't have time for all that. And to be honest, I don't even promote global wealth protection that much anyway. Like, my main business now is Business Anywhere. So I feel what I don't like about it, though, is the people that do what I do that work with this audience, we call them digital nomads, or, you know, it's kind of the coined phrase nowadays. But the people that work with digital nomads like that, there's only a handful of us out there doing it. Mm. And I know every one of them. I mean, I've been doing this for more than 20 years. The whole digital nomad thing has only existed for about, the term digital nomad has only existed for about 10 years.
Yeah, this is recent, like after COVID, I'm assuming.
No, it was before COVID.
Oh, it was before COVID,
Yeah, it was before COVID, but COVID was definitely a major catalyst to skyrocket the numbers. Yeah. But I've been doing this before digital nomad was a term. We called it geo-arbitrage like 20 years ago. But I know everybody doing this. I know everybody doing it. I know who's good at it and who's not. I know there's a handful of guys out there that are actually quite good at this. But not many. And the reason there's not many is because it is a relatively small audience. It's a relatively small community. Now, it's not small. I mean, we're talking globally, probably 100 million people doing this. But in 100 million out of 8 billion is still, you know, a pretty small number.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, 100 million is a lot of people, but you're talking 100 million over 200 countries.
Yeah, percentage-wise, it's a little small, but, you know, the number of people doing it, yeah.
Americans alone, there's something, last time I looked, something like 30 million Americans now living like this.
Yeah, yeah. The IRS let me
clarify the point. So there's expats. So expats are people who move from one country, move to another outside
of the
country.
Change your residency, basically, right?
Yeah, but you just move from one, like you move from Canada and then you go to Greece and now you live in Greece. So that's expats. Digital nomads are people who leave their home country and then they travel around. They might be 3 months in Greece.
So they don't have a fixed place. They just mobile.
Well, like in my case, I have three fixed places. So I call myself a slomad, right? So, I move between my three home bases. And then I also travel. Like, I don't have a home base here in Puerto Vallarta. I just came here for my side quest, so to speak, with my buddy for 2 weeks. But I, my, like, Playa del Carmen is my Mexican home base. And so there's people like me that have one or two home bases, and then they travel also. There's the pure digital nomads who, hey, I'm going to be here for a month and here for 6 weeks and here for 2 months and like that. So it's a range, but on the low end of that range is expats who just leave their home country. So when I say there's like 30 million Americans doing this, I'm talking expats or nomads. Okay. 30 million Americans that live outside of the U.S.
Of course.
Right?
Yeah.
But all in, there's close to 100 million people around the world living this. But it's, but the problem is, like, that does seem like a larger number. So you would think, okay, this is a big enough audience for people to want to do it. But fundamentally, the problem is almost everyone that starts living this life like this, they leave their home country, almost everyone says, I'm going to stay connected in my home country because they don't know any better.
That's right.
They're like, okay, I'm just going to keep my company in Canada. I'm going to keep my tax residency in Canada. Sure, I'm not going to live there. I'm going to go live in Costa Rica half the year, and I'm going to go live in, you know, I don't know, Argentina for half the year,
whatever.
But they keep that base in Canada because they don't know any better. So the reason, even though there might be close to 100 million people doing this, there's a tiny fraction of those people who have started to think, maybe I can optimize for this. Because, you know, you got to admit, governments do a pretty decent job of brainwashing us into thinking that we need to remain connected to our home country. Like, I had a German client. I have a German client who, this girl who, she does really, really well. She's got a very successful business. It took us 6 1-hour calls for me to convince her she didn't need to continue to pay tax in Germany, even though she had lived in Germany for like 10 years. It took me 6 1-hour calls, 6 hours of calls to convince her. And by convince, I mean, I'm literally on the government website showing her the things where this is how you exit the German tax system. And she just couldn't wrap her head around the idea that she didn't need to still pay tax in Germany, even though she hadn't lived there for 10 years.
Yeah. No, in Canada, we call it the universal healthcare system. basically, you need to pay taxes in Canada because if anything happened to you abroad, you got to come back and get medicated here or get treated here.
Oh, God forbid. Yeah. There's no doctors anywhere else. It's only in Canada.
Yeah, of course. And there's no doctors anywhere else. And it's all bogus, in my opinion. I mean, don't get me going on the universal healthcare system in Canada. It's complete bogus. I mean, I can do 2-3 episodes on this thing. But in any case, back to
I could talk healthcare all day.
Because it's part isn't it part of your offer too? Like, I mean, you probably have to talk to people. Listen, you can get insurance. You can get, you know, stuff outside your country's good, but there are equal opportunities somewhere else for healthcare.
I'll tell you something that I can't tell you how many times people have come to me and been like, you are so irresponsible. But I haven't had health insurance in 18 years. Like, I've done the math.
Right? If you need something, you go pay for it. Is that the
alternative? I go pay for it. Yeah, I just pay for it. And people are like, oh my God, what if you get cancer? Or what if you do X, Y, or Z? Sure. If you get cancer, sure. Then you know exactly what happens if you have like a major medical event without insurance? You negotiate a direct price and you make payments to the hospital. That's literally how it works.
That's how it
people
works.
People are like, no, that can't be true. But I've done the math on this. I know we're on a side topic here, but this is hilarious to me. And I just had this with a buddy of mine a couple of days ago. So about 4 years ago, I did a colonoscopy and an endoscopy. You know, I'm old now, so I got to do stuff like that. And I went to the doctor in the U.S. I just happened to be traveling through the U.S. and this happened. So I went to the doctor and they gave me, like, they said, you know, you go to the doctor first and they're like, okay, yes, you need this. Let's schedule it for 2 months or 3 months later. So it worked out. I was there for the initial and then I was going to be there like 3 months later for the time to have the procedure. And when I went there, the first visit, and they said, okay, like, who's your health insurance carrier? And I'm like, I don't have health insurance. First of all, they look at me like I'm an alien because they think, how can it be possible a human doesn't have health insurance? But I said, I don't have health insurance. They said, okay, how are you going to pay for it? I said, I'll just pay for it. So they gave me a printout of the bill, what it was going to be. So on the printout, this is the U.S. healthcare system, not Canadian, but they gave me a printout of the bill. If they billed my insurance company, the price was $5,000 or like $5,200. If I paid myself directly, the bill was $2,000. Okay.
And that's, they put that in black and white to you?
Yeah. I have the printout. It's on the,
I'm sorry, but talk about scam artists.
It's on the bill. It's on the bill. It says billable rate to health insurance provider, $5,200. Billable rate to individual, like $2,000 or roughly five and two. Okay. Now, if I were in the U.S., I would have to have health insurance at least for that 4-month window of the initial visit and the completion of the procedure. Okay. Minimum. I'd have to go get health insurance for that. So right now in the U.S., at my age, I'd probably pay about $1,000 a month for health insurance. Okay. So $1,000, $1,000, $1,000, $1,000, $4,000 in premiums I would have paid. And then I would have had a 20% deductible, but the 20% deductible is on the insurance bill rate. So 20% of $5,000 is $1,000. So $4,000 in premium plus $1,000 deductible, ta-da, it's $5,000. So I would have had to have paid $5,000. If I had health insurance, it would have cost me $5,000. Without health insurance, it cost me $2,000. Now, get this. In the U.S., this is mind-blowing. It's in the Health Care Act. People just can't comprehend this. But I asked them, how can I pay for it? When I was leaving the doctor and, like, how can I pay for the bill? And she said, well, you can pay for it all at once, or you can pay a little bit now and you pay us later, or you can just pay nothing and make payments. And I'm like, well, how much do I have to make if I make payments? Is there a minimum payment? And she goes, no, as long as you're paying something every month, then everything's fine. You just have to pay us every month and everything's fine. So I asked her, I said, so I'm not saying I'm going to do this, but you mean if I paid you a dollar a month for 2,000 months, that would be fine? And she goes, well, I'm not supposed to tell you this, but yes, that is correct. So I looked this up in the Health Care Act. It's correct. They can't make you pay more than you can afford. And if you agree to pay a certain amount, they have to accept whatever amount you want to make or whatever you want to pay. So people are like, but what happens if you get cancer? Well, I'll just go to the doctor and pay the hospital bill some lower negotiated monthly fee.
That's right.
And that rate is cheaper than I would pay if I paid health insurance.
Wow. How many people don't know this information, which is scary?
Nobody. Right? Nobody knows that. Nobody knows that. Yeah. Yeah. I've had doctors argue with me with that, and I've sent them the links to the pages in the Health Care Act, and they're like, holy shit, I did not know that. Like, I've got a really good friend of mine who's a doctor for Johns Hopkins, and him and I talked about it. He's a doctor with Johns Hopkins. Now, he's a contract doctor. He's not like an employee, like a W-2 employee. He's a contract doctor, and he told me the same thing. He goes, I'm a doctor. I haven't had health insurance. He told me like a couple months ago. He said, I haven't had health insurance in 15 years either. He said, why would I pay insurance? That's stupid. He said, the doctor who's a contract doctor for Johns Hopkins told me that's stupid to pay health insurance. It's way cheaper to not have it.
So if you don't mind, I love this because it's very educational for me and for the community out there who are contemplating or currently in a position where they're working in the U.S. or working outside of the jurisdiction where you have currently healthcare, and healthcare is a big topic for everybody.
Sure.
Nobody.
Okay. Let me say this too. If you're listening to this right now and you think, okay, Bobby's insane, that's crazy, I would never have health insurance, great. Go get health insurance. There's plenty of companies that do international health insurance. It's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Actually, it's funny too. If you're an American and you want to move outside the U.S. and then you get international coverage, it's literally about 1/4 to 1/5 the price of what your U.S. health insurance coverage is going to be as long as they exclude the U.S. from your coverage area. You might pay $1,500 a month for health insurance living in the U.S., but if you're like, I'm going to go live abroad, you can pay $300 a month that will literally cover you everywhere in the world except the U.S.
For obvious reasons.
Yeah, because the U.S.
You just talked about the invoice.
Yeah, the U.S. Health insurance scam, it's wild.
Absolutely.
But yeah, there's a bunch of companies out there that offer international health. If you're not as comfortable, if you're not at my risk aversion level, which I get it, not everyone is, and if you're not, then, you know, like Cigna is a good company out there that does international.
You guys have a healthcare insurance company called United something?
United Healthcare is U.S. only.
Oh, okay.
That's U.S. only.
It's U.S. only, okay.
The two big ones in the U.S. that more or less have a monopoly in the U.S. is United Healthcare and Blue Cross Blue Shield.
Yeah, I used to work for Blue Cross back in the days. I worked for them as an actuarial analyst back in the days. I used to do policy ratings and stuff. So,
yeah.
Now, one of the things I wanted to cover today is Business Anywhere. And we sort of covered it kind of thing, but let's, you know, talk a little bit from a practical sense. What do you mean when you say Business Anywhere for the listeners who are thinking, okay, I like what Bobby's saying. Robin and Bobby are having a great discussion. I'm excited now. Talk to me. How are you going to help me? Business Anywhere, what does it do?
So, I mean, basically, we're a platform for startups. So you can go on our website. It's businessanywhere.io. You can register your company. We do the company formation. We provide registered agent service. So if you don't know what that means, whenever you register a company, actually, this is the same anywhere in the world. Even if you register a company in Canada and you're in, let's say, Ontario, you have to have a registered address in Ontario to register your company in Ontario.
Yeah, that's the what same I had in to go US. Through in November, by the way. I had to register a company in November. I had to go through that.
Yep. So it's the same in the U.S., but in the U.S., there's like you register at the state level. So there's 50 states plus a couple of the territories. And so you register at the state or the territory level, you have to have a registered address. So we provide the registered agent service at that address. We also have, we provide a mailing service. It's a virtual mailbox service. So we receive your mail, we scan it, upload it into your dashboard so you can read your mail online. So if you're like a traveling person and you're living in different places or moving around, like a virtual mailbox is kind of a must have for
people. Is this what you call the digital nomad kit?
It's part of our digital nomad kit. I mean, we offer everything as an a la carte service, but digital nomad kit includes that thing also, the virtual mailbox.
Oh, it does?
Yeah.
And did I hear correctly that you compete with companies such as LegalZoom, Zen Business, Stripe, Atlas, et cetera? Is that the category that you're competing with or no?
Yeah. Our competitors would be like LegalZoom or Zen Business. Yeah, something like that.
And
Stripe Atlas is a little bit different because Stripe Atlas is very limited in what they do. They really only do Delaware companies, and it's they don't do it all over the U.S. and it's very narrow of what they do. I mean, if you're looking for a Delaware company, I mean, we would be in competition with Stripe Atlas, but they're pretty narrow on that. I mean, that's such a tiny piece of their business. Like the Stripe processing is obviously the big. That and data is the big piece of their business.
Bobby, do you have anybody helping you or you have a team? Are you working by yourself? How does that work?
Oh, yeah. No, we have a team.
I'm just imagining. I mean, you've got so many sprouting businesses somewhere and they're all different functions. So.
Yeah, no, I have a team for every company. Each company has their own team.
And are they all like digital nomad or they have a fixed location?
All of our employees. Well, my company in the Caribbean, we do have a quote office, so to speak. I mean, we do. We actually have an office there that we have to pay for. We have one of our company directors that lives on the island in Anguilla. But to be honest, I don't think he goes to the office. I really don't know. I personally haven't been to that office in probably 10 years.
Yeah.
That's the only quote fixed office we have. Everyone else works from home. Not everyone is digital nomad, but a couple of people are. They're more nomadic. I mean, most people are like, you know, they work from home. Maybe you got some mom with kids who, you know, likes working from home because she can take a 2-hour lunch to go hang out with her kids at school and stuff like that. So, but yeah, every one of our team members works remotely in some way or another, either from their home or, you know,
somewhere
sitting here. I'm looking out on the bay of Puerto Vallarta. Like I'm on a high rise building looking out over the bay.
I love that.
You'd love this building. This is the best building in town.
Are you by the water? Is that where you're staying? You're staying by the water?
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I'm not on the water. I'm a few blocks away, but it's a high rise sitting back like up in the hill a little bit. So because you've never been to Puerto Vallarta, you got mountains here. So
yeah, I stayed once up in the hill over the famous cathedral or church, whatever you call it.
It's at the top right of the hill, there.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Right there.
Yeah. Amazing.
Yeah. My view is incredible.
Yeah. So you operate in multi-dimension or multi-countries. Your customers are speaking different languages, and our audience are in the language business. Obviously, the conversation, it leads to the conversation of languages. Have you solved the language issue and how?
Well, for example, our website is multilingual. We have several languages. Our website can be viewed in several languages. But what I found is Business Anywhere is a U.S. focused company. We do U.S. company formation, U.S. virtual mailbox. We have like technology partners, like some digital banks and stuff like that. You can open your bank account through our platform. You can set up bookkeeping. So because it's U.S. based, it's pretty much only international people that are doing international business. So everyone speaks English. So we really haven't had too much problem with that. We do have occasionally someone from Latin America who wants a U.S. company. And so they want to speak to somebody in Spanish. So we do have a couple of team members who speak Spanish if that's necessary. I mean, to be honest, like in different roles, because we have people in all different countries. Like I have team members in probably 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. I think 8 or 9 different countries we have team members. So, I mean, theoretically, if someone really wanted to talk to somebody in Russian or Ukrainian or...
You put them in touch with one of your staff?
Swahili or, you know, Portuguese or whatever. Like, sure. I mean, we have a team member that speaks it, but we don't really need it. Like it's like even we have a chat function on our website. It's on the front end of our website, but it's also in the order processing of through the website. And if you talk to it in Swahili, it'll automatically answer you in Swahili. Even if it's a live team member answering you, because you asked in Swahili, it'll automatically translate to you back in Swahili, for example. So it's and then we have like onboarding videos, like they're all AI. We use AI for everything for the onboarding videos, and it'll automatically, like, you can choose the language and it'll automatically translate our onboarding video to whichever language you want. It's funny because we have our quote AI agent that is doing the videos, and you can flip a switch and she'll talk to you in English, and you flip the switch and she switches to Ukrainian. Like, it's pretty cool.
Amazing, huh?
Yeah. Technology is wild.
The way technology is moving. Do you use AI in your business, Bobby? Is there a use for AI in your business?
Every step of everything we do uses AI in our business.
And did you do that gradually, or you just decided one day I'm going to do this, create efficiency or create new opportunity using AI?
We started implementing AI tools in our business within the first 30 days of ChatGPT launching.
Yeah. What's the impact?
So I would say gradually, yes, we gradually implemented AI tools, but we gradually implemented things as things improved. And we're like, oh, actually, now AI is good enough to do X. Okay, let's do X now with AI. The impact from a marketing perspective, I mean, it's a game changer from a marketing perspective. Like, we use AI in literally every single step of our marketing strategy. And
yeah,
I mean, if I didn't use AI at all, I would be left behind. I think I would be left behind competitively, or I would have a much lower profit margin because I would have to hire 10 people to do what one person and AI can do.
Yeah.
But not only, I mean, we don't use it only for marketing. We use it like, we use it for coding. So like 2 years ago, if we launched a new product on our site, it might take a month to roll it out. Now it takes like 3 days. So we use like our dev team uses Claude Code to do everything. Yeah.
Writing code now is easier now.
Yeah, they use Claude Code, but we still have human, we still have human touch. So they'll code it in Claude Code and then they'll go back and make sure everything seems right and test it and everything. But if we didn't use Claude Code for rolling out new products, I mean, it would still take us a month to roll out a new thing.
No, it's a game changer for everybody if it's used correctly. I run the AI Exchange. It's a networking event that takes place on Fridays. If you or your team are interested in it, it's free of charge. People can come in and participate in the conversation. It's a global team from around the globe. I think we have like about 75 now. We normally get on a weekly basis, get like 20 people, 25 people joining. And they're all entrepreneurs, mm-hmm. or they are from various countries, Argentina, the UK. I've got people from various places. And we had a conversation mm-hmm. today. We were talking about the use of AI in a sort of like the moonshot version, meaning that instead of incrementally including AI and dipping your toe into it, oh, I got to get it to manage my emails. I got to get it to do my whatever, small steps. What about if you 10X that and move to the larger, if you want to make a jump that's 2 feet long, why don't you make a mile jump down the road and see what it does to your business? And I think most people have started deploying AI in an incremental fashion, but very few they did that leap forward or leapfrog forward everybody kind of thing. So that's what the conversation was about today. So now,
I mean, I would definitely have a bigger team. I would definitely have a bigger team without AI. That's 100%.
I mean, it's a game changer in terms of efficiency for sure. I mean, look at me. I mean, I'm running a small consulting firm, small company with podcasts, with customers, etc. I don't have anybody helping me. It's me. Trust me, it is. If it wasn't for that, I probably need an army of people.
Yeah. Everyone on my team, even my customer service people. So like one really cool, I know we're still on the AI topic and I know you want to jump, but I'll just make one point. Like, internally within our team, like even customer service and like people that are doing the company registration and like the mail management with the virtual mailbox and all that stuff. So we have an internal AI tool that we use that has that basically takes our knowledge base of everything we already do. So what we've done is several things, but one thing, we make a Loom video whenever we have a training process we need to teach somebody about. So let's say, let's say the state of Michigan changes the process to register an LLC in Michigan. And the next time my team member goes to register a Michigan LLC for a client and the process has changed, that person will record a Loom video of the whole process of them registering that Michigan LLC so that we update our video knowledge base on how to register a new Michigan LLC. So we'll replace the old video with the new one. Okay. Well, we take those videos plus some other SOPs we've created and we put it into a knowledge base AI. So now if my team has a question, how to do something, they don't know how to do something, they get stuck on something, they can actually go to our knowledge base AI and ask it how to do something and get an instant answer instead of maybe posting, because our team is all over the world in different time zones. So instead of posting a message in Slack for somebody else to read and answer, they go to our knowledge base AI and ask the question, get the answer. Whereas if they post it in Slack or have to schedule a meeting with somebody or whatever, it can take hours or a day to get an answer. That's also been a huge game changer for us, is keeping the team productive and trained and onboarding new people, because what we do to onboard somebody now, we give them the video library and say, watch these videos. That's like their first week is watching videos. And then we'll give them like 1 or 2 days of handholding with somebody. And then after that, they're on their own.
Yeah.
And if they got a question, go ask the knowledge, go ask the internal AI.
That's right. Did you, just curious, did you have to lay off anybody because of the efficiency gain?
No, because we're growing like crazy. I mean, we're up 80% over last year.
You know, you're a typical
customer. We're up 80% over last year, and I've hired one extra person.
There you go. And this is what I've been promoting. That's what I was trying to talk about in all of my conversation on the podcast, at in the networking events, and anytime I get invited to a conference. You don't need AI to reduce costs. You probably can use AI to increase your revenue, to increase your exposure, to increase your market share, etc. It is not enough to use AI for cost efficiency. You've got to use 100%. AI to drive revenue.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. If you don't mind moving to philosophy and vision, if you don't mind, I love this segment. And I wanted to, we started a little bit about that one. But as we, as I think about it, one of the things that you talk about, which it's very interesting, you've said most people build their businesses backwards. They chase the revenue, then they realize the business owns them rather than the other way around, where they control the business versus now they're sort of slave to the business versus them controlling the business. What is the right sequence in your mind, and how do you control that?
Well, I think this is a mindset perspective too. So I'm going to go in one direction. You tell me if you don't like this path, but I think we're all brainwashed. I mean, we're all brainwashed every day anyway. It's just, you need to select. Yeah. Well, we're all brainwashed, but you need to select your inputs. You either get passive inputs into your brain, or you selectively choose how you get brainwashed. One way or the other, you get brainwashed, right?
Of course.
I mean, brainwashing is like, if I turn on CNN and I play CNN on the TV all day long, even if I'm not actively watching the TV, I'm going to get brainwashed to...
Your subconscious is being changed.
Yeah, my subconscious is being changed because I'm going to be listening to CNN all day long, either like consciously or subconsciously. So I'm going to kind of absorb and take on the political leanings of CNN. If I watch BBC all day, I'm going to be on the BBC side. If I watch Fox News all day, you know, like it depends on that. So you need to actively brainwash yourself in the way you want to be brainwashed. The way to do that is to go find people that you want to emulate, like somebody I want to be like, man, I really want to be like Robin. Let me do what Robin does every day so I can be like Robin, right?
And you started the conversation by saying you surrounded yourself with friends, with like-minded people. That's how you started the conversation, yeah.
Yeah, I figured that out probably in my late 20s that, I mean, you've probably heard this phrase before. You're the average of five people you spend the most time with.
Is the company you keep, is that it?
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of the average of the five people you spend the most time with. And if you look at it, you look at any person, you can see how that is. Like, for example, let's say your favorite hobby is playing golf. I can take a guess probably what all your closest buddies do. They probably all play golf, right?
Yeah.
I can take a guess that based on how much money you make or your net worth or where you live, who you spend time with. Because if you're like what's called a wage slave. Like if you got a regular job and you're a wage slave, corporate guy, you're going to have a completely different mindset than somebody that owns a business. And if you're a wage slave and all your friends own their own business, you're eventually going to own your own business. Like at some point you can't help it. You're going to do it. Like you can't do it. But if you own your own business and all of your buddies have corporate jobs, you're probably going to sell the company or close it and go get a corporate job. If you go hunting every weekend and like all your buddies go hunting, you're going to go hunting. That's like, it's just the way it is. Like you're going to be the average of the five people. So if you want to increase your station in life, like you want to make more money, you want to have a different lifestyle, you want to travel the world, you want to do whatever, like you want to be a great tennis player. Guess what? You can't hang out with your buddies that don't play tennis if you want to be a great tennis player. you're going to go have to hang out with people who are great tennis players, you know?
Or at
if
least
you
want to
travel
it,
the world. Right. If you want to travel the world, you can't hang out with people who have never made it past 4 hours from their home. You can't do it because the mindset, you can't overcome that mindset. You just can't. So you have to pull yourself out and go hang out with the right people. And so to that perspective with business, I look at it like this. If you want to build a $1 billion company, the business is going to own you, period. Okay. If that's your goal, if you want to be the next Bill Gates or Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or any of these $1 billion guys, the business is going to own you, period, full stop. Because you're going to live, eat, breathe, sleep. Everything's going to be the business. And I don't have a problem with that. Like, I'm grateful for Jeff Bezos. Like, I love Amazon. Like, who doesn't shop on Amazon nowadays?
Everybody does.
Like, I love Amazon. Like, I freaking love Amazon. Like, thank you, Bezos, for committing your entire life to making my shopping experience easier. I love it. It's great. Right. But I don't think people build world changing businesses as a lifestyle business. I don't think it happens. OK.
Yeah.
So the idea here is either you commit to that as an entrepreneur, you commit to changing the world, or you can kind of make a lifestyle business. So my perspective on this is I wanted a high quality life. I wanted a really amazing quality life. I wanted my lifestyle, my quality life to be the most important thing for me. In my 20s. I wanted to build the biggest company I could. And I did that. I mean, not a billionaire, but I built a pretty decent sized company, which I got out of when I was in my early 30s. And at that point, I decided I didn't like that lifestyle anymore. I didn't want to be a slave to my office. I owned the company, but let's be honest, the company owned me. Okay. And I have an interesting or maybe a different perspective on this, but I look at it like this. You go to school, you get good grades, you get the education, blah, blah, blah. We're conditioned from childhood up to be career oriented. Okay. So look at it like a bullseye, you know, like you play darts or you archery, whatever. You got a bullseye.
Yep.
The center of that bullseye or the center of the board is the bullseye, right?
Yeah.
And so we're conditioned our entire life for the career focus to be the bullseye in a sense.
Yeah.
It's the most important thing. We literally, we're 8 years old. Hey, you better get good grades so you can got a good transcript.
Work for the other company.
Well, no, we're slowly conditioned. You need to get good grades so that you get into the right classes in high school so that you can get AP classes or honors classes or whatever. Because if you don't get good grades in elementary school, you won't get into AP classes. If you don't get AP classes, you won't get into the top college. If you don't get into the top college, you won't get the good job, right? So, but it's all focused on career mindset, right? Which makes the bullseye of your dartboard the career path. And then everything in your life becomes a ring around that dartboard. Literally, where you go on vacation, your hobbies, where you live, where you go to lunch every day, who your friends are, everything becomes, I can't go on vacation until October because I don't have days off from my job. I can't go to lunch with you an hour and a half away because I don't have time to do that and get back to work. I can't go on vacation here. I don't make enough money to go, 3 weeks in the Bahamas or whatever it is, right? So when I was around 32 or 3 or whatever, I came to the conclusion that I didn't want to be career focused anymore. I wanted to have an amazing lifestyle. I wanted my lifestyle to be the bullseye, and I wanted my business, my work to be a ring. And that's the best way I can explain it. I wanted everything. I wanted my lifestyle to be exactly what I wanted, meaning you know the perfect day formula, right? Like you talk about what's your perfect day look like? Where do you wake up? Where do you live? What do you do? Blah, blah, blah.
And everybody has their perfect day, right?
Yeah, if you think about it, everyone does, but it takes a little bit of work to think through that. But I had my own perfect day formula, and I didn't want to I didn't want to have to compromise my perfect day formula for a job or a business. So I built my company to match my perfect day formula.
Okay.
In other words, my business had to be a ring around my bullseye, not the bullseye
itself. You flipped it. You flipped it around. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think, but that's, I'm not saying that's the right mindset or anything. I'm just saying that was my mindset. I'm never going to build a billion-dollar company for sure, because I'm not ever going to, for example, I called my buddy up 2 weeks ago and said, hey, let's have a 2-week side quest in Puerto Vallarta. All right, cool. Let's go do it. If I was running or building or focused on building a billion-dollar company, I don't have time to do a 2-week side quest in Puerto Vallarta. Can you imagine Jeff Bezos when he was 42 years old doing a 2-week side quest, Puerto Vallarta? Never. He's not doing that.
It won't happen.
If he was, he'd be sitting at the table all day working.
With his laptop, probably, trying to
connect. With his laptop. Yeah, and three assistants around him handling everything. And I don't want to live like that. Yeah, but I'm willing to sacrifice building a billion-dollar company to run, seven- and eight-figure companies instead. But just not – I don't want a billion-dollar company. I don't want to do that. I don't want to live like that. And so you have to decide what your focus is. But if you are so and job people, I don't think there's any other mindset there. You're career focused, because you have to be. If your boss tells you to be at work on Saturday at 10 a.m., you either show up or you lose your job. You don't really have that. You don't really have that flexibility and freedom to do that. You only have flexibility and freedom like that in most cases if you own your own business. You can be some remote worker and you do have some of that. But for the most part, if you're a high paid executive, you are
a slave to the paycheck. I got out of that rat race.
Yeah. And that's how it is, right? Yeah. You know what I'm talking about.
I spent 25 years in my recent stint with one company through acquisition, obviously. No company stays the same anymore. But, 25 years done.
And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just, I'm saying it's not my thing, and that's not what I wanted to do.
No, but on a personal level, I feel like there's a transformation in me I did not know existed. When I was at a corporate level, you're right. I could not go on vacation. I could not go on lunches unless I program it ahead of time, notify people, put out of my office reply, do a bunch of things. Now, I don't care. If I want to go on vacation, I go on vacation.
You go. And if you're on vacation and you have to work a little bit, okay, take the laptop.
Yeah.
It's no big deal. I don't know if you're married, but you're like, hey, honey, why don't you go to breakfast without me? I got to work for about 2 hours. I'll see you at the beach.
Yeah, I
see you at the pool or whatever.
When we were in Mexico last spring, I did the same thing. I'm married. I don't have kids. And it makes me a little bit more at ease of how I manage my life. I can't believe I lasted as long as I lasted in the corporate world, because I was born to be an entrepreneur. And the reason I stayed in the corporate world, I think, is because I was running my own show. To a large extent, it felt like being an entrepreneur. Now, of course, I was reporting to others.
Intrapreneur?
Yeah, intrapreneur.
Is that what they call it? Intrapreneur? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Now, if you don't mind my last closing question. In the world that you work with, that the customers that you serve were, if we were talking about borderless business, let's call it this way. Sure. Where do you think this is going to be in the next 5 years? What do you think this is people are building toward? What's their hopes and aspiration there? From your vision, where do you see this is going?
I mean, honestly, I think you're going to see big companies laying off executives and high paid VP level people left and right, and outsourcing to the same people, but as freelancers. I think that's going to be a big trend. It already is a trend. The whole quote digital nomad thing, it kind of started in 2003. So 2003 was the year you had a couple of Estonian guys create Skype.
Yep.
And so pre-Skype, if you traveled, maybe you did. I did a couple of times. If you traveled, you come back home with a $5,000 cell phone bill because, you travel and it's $9 a minute or something stupid for making calls. That's not really practical if you own your own business to come home with a $5,000 cell phone bill after a couple of weeks, right? You're running a small business. You can't have a line item on your P&L for your cell phone bill being $5,000 every single month. And so Skype came out and made global communication. It just flipped the script on global communication. Now, all of a sudden, hey, we both have Skype. Cool. I can call you. You can call me. If we both have internet, we can do a video call, audio call, whatever, at zero cost or like really cheap. And it flipped the script. And then in 2007, you had, what's it called? The 4-Hour Work Week was published.
Yeah.
What's his name? Tim Ferriss. Tim Ferriss published The 4-Hour Work Week. I think it was 2007. And that became kind of the Bible for digital nomads because it was kind of like a handbook on how to live a global life, either as an entrepreneur or as a corporate guy. Like I had a friend of mine years ago who was an engineer, industrial engineer, and he read, it was a long time ago, probably 2010. He's a corporate guy, industrial engineer. He read the book and he's like, I got to live like this. Like, I can't stand going to the office every day, but I like being an engineer. He likes working for the company he was with. And he went to his boss after he read the book. He went to his boss and said, hey, I want to work remotely. It's like 2010, by the way. This is way, way, way.
Yeah, 16 years ago almost. Wow.
Yeah. And he said, I want to work remotely. And his boss said, are you crazy? Like, you can't do that. We're an engineering firm. You got to be in the office every day. And he's like, listen, let's do a test. Let me work 2 days a week from home and I'll come in 3 days a week. And if I'm not at least as productive, if not more productive than I was being in the office 2 days a week, I'll give it up and come back 5 days a week. If I am at least as productive or more productive, I want to expand that where I can eventually get to working remotely full time. And his boss said, okay, that's fair. That's a fair trade. Let's do it. Well, I mean, you know the story. Basically, he was way more productive working from home. Like, he got way more done. He's not going to all these BS meetings that mean nothing.
Water cooler conversations and all that stuff.
Water cooler conversations. You don't need all that stuff. And he got way more done, worked less hours. And his boss is like, wow, this is impressive. Like, he's knocking out these projects that were taking a month. He was getting them done in 2 weeks. So he transitioned to being fully remote. He was living in Arizona, Scottsdale at the time.
Yeah.
But he had a family home in somewhere in the mountains. I want Colorado or Utah. I don't remember now. And then he also had a family home in Greece. So ironically, you like Greece. So he had a family home in Greece, like his parents or grandparents, something were from Greece. And so he started like doing the nomad thing, like kind of like what I do. He'd go to the mountains and ski in the wintertime. He'd go to Greece in the summertime. And then he'd go back to Arizona a little bit. And eventually he just went to his boss and said, listen, why don't you just fire me and contract with me the engineering work? Just hire me as a contractor. You don't even have to have me on payroll anymore. And it'll save you all this employment costs. Let's negotiate a rate and you just pay me by job. And so he eventually convinced his company to do that.
Probably he made more money.
So what he ended up doing, I think this is incredible. So what he ended up doing, yes, he did make more money because he negotiated a higher rate because it cut their employment costs and benefits and stuff. So he actually made more money. But what he ended up doing is he hired some Indian engineers. And so I don't know what the billing rate is for engineering, but let's say $200 an hour. And he was hiring these Indian engineers for, let's say, $40 an hour or something like that. And he basically became an engineering project manager where he would hand off the work to a couple of Indian engineers. They did all the work and he just, made sure everything was correct. And then he went out and found two or three other engineering companies to do that. And he built an engineering firm out of it.
Oh, wow.
And it was, yeah. So, and this is way back in 2010. So you asked me what the trend is. So you had the Skype, which kind of opened the door for small business owners and freelancers to actually be able to do it. Then you had Tim Ferriss wrote the handbook on how to do it. And now we had COVID, which basically told the whole world, hey, you can't come to work anyway. So now we had all these tools that just, especially since 2020, have all these technology tools exploded. Now there's literally no reason. I mean, of course, if you wait tables or if you lay brick or you know, if you dig ditches or mow yards, obviously you got to show up and do work. But if you're in the knowledge-based work, there's not a reason to go to an office. The only reason you had to go to an office is if your company demands it.
Yeah.
But there's another company out there. Yeah. But there's another company out there that'll be like, hey, over here, we'll hire you and you don't have to go to an office.
Fine. Yeah.
Like, it's a win-win. Sure. It's a win-win. The company's like, we don't have to have an office. We just cut $3,000 a month out of our bills.
Real estate costs in cities are expensive.
Yeah. So if you look right now, you can track this trend with the commercial real estate vacancy rates. Commercial real estate vacancy has skyrocketed since 2020.
Let's convert them all to condos.
There's a problem. There's a big problem with that too. That is kind of the general idea, and that's what's gradually happening. But there's a big problem with that. There's some complications to do that, like especially with zoning stuff and yeah, the cost to convert. But no, it is happening. Like, it's even happening. Well, like, back to Bezos. This is also happening with shopping malls, because like shopping malls are dying left and right now. So I've seen shopping malls now. I've seen one that was really cool, like such a freaking cool concept, an indoor shopping mall. And they converted the whole thing into like a multi-use. So they kept like the food courts and the restaurants and like the grocery store. But then the upper levels, what used to be, you know, all your retail, they turned into condos.
Oh, yeah.
And so now it's like a multi-use place, multi-use facility. You can live there and you walk downstairs for dinner. Go back upstairs. You go downstairs to go to the grocery store.
Beautiful.
You go downstairs to go to the bar. You go downstairs to shoot pool or whatever.
Very convenient. Like, very convenient.
Yeah. So I think the trend, as they say, like, you cannot unring this bell.
No, it's done.
Like, you can't unring this bell. Like, people don't.
The genie's out of the bottle, Bobby. I mean, everybody is talking about it right now. You can't put technology back into the bottle anymore. It's out. People are going to be using it. And that's the new reality.
And companies, like, there are companies out there that are like, no, you have to come back to work and come to the office. Yep. But the problem, and some people, here's my opinion on that, on the workers themselves, the employees that work for the companies. If you have a good worker, if you have a good employee, they're going to do well in an office. They're also going to do well working from home because they're going to do their job well.
Yeah, they're not going to be golfing when they tell you that they're working.
If you have somebody that's a terrible employee or even a mediocre employee, they'll do pretty good at the office, but they're going to do terrible working from home, which becomes a really quick self-filtering process.
Self-filtering process. You're absolutely correct. Yeah.
Because you're gonna see, if you hire them remotely, you're going to see within a couple of months, they're terrible, right? Yeah, and so you fire them and you hire somebody that's better. So it also, there's a lot of ripple effects to this work from home, remote work thing, and one of those ripple effects is you got to up your game now in the workforce.
Yeah, you gotta shine. You can't just be under the rock anymore.
You gotta up your game now, because like, if you go remote and the company makes you go remote, which very often happens now, and you're not driven and self motivated to get your work done at home, you're gonna get fired. And we gotta like. And somebody's going to take your job in a heartbeat now. And also, you got all these companies telling people, hey, we want you to come back into the office. But you got company A saying, come back to the office. We're demanding it. And you got this worker going, I don't want to do that. Like, I work less from home. I go have 2-hour lunch with my kids at school. I don't commute an hour each way anymore. Why would I do that? And then you got company B over here going, hey, we'll hire you remotely. So it creates this competitive environment between the companies now.
Yeah.
And to take that a step further, at the macro scale, now you actually have countries competing for workers.
Oh, yeah, because now it's open, right? It's an open season now.
Yeah, like you can be a tech worker working for, you know, Google in Silicon Valley, but go live, you know, working on the beach in Costa Rica and going surfing every morning. Like, there's nothing prohibiting you from doing that now if you're an info worker.
Yeah.
And so now you have countries going, hey, look over here. we have a special visa. Just basically, they fall under the category of digital nomad visas. So you got a lot of countries now. There's probably 40 or 50 countries now offering what they call a digital nomad visa, trying to attract remote workers to come live in their country.
Oh, yeah. They're opening the door quite wide, many countries. So,
by the way, Greece has a digital nomad visa.
Absolutely. And that's why I want to talk to you after the conversation.
Sure.
I really appreciate it today, Bobby. It was a great conversation. I really enjoyed it. It's a hot topic. Everybody's thinking it. We just got the news today that we're in a recession, technical recession. I don't know what that means. Technical recession versus an actual recession, God knows. But many people probably are thinking and contemplating changing their lives. And this is a very timely conversation. A couple of weeks ago, we had an announcement from one of the largest telco in the country, Rogers Communication. I'm not sure if you're familiar with this company.
I've heard
announced, of it. Announced that they're laying off 12,500 people, like 50% of their staff. There are many changes in the corporate world that's going to drive more and more from an economy perspective, the movement of these individuals, the movement of the workforce to various things, either remotely, independently, freelancers, changing countries. This is very timely conversation. I really enjoyed it. What do you think? Did we cover everything you had in mind?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I'll hit on a couple of it. You just reminded me of something. Facebook just announced they're laying off 20% of their workforce now too.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's another, Facebook or Meta, I guess now it's Meta. So another huge company laying off a big chunk of their workforce. Interestingly, recently Target just closed down their Minneapolis headquarters and they sent most of their office workers remote. Like Target has been like an anchor building in the middle of downtown Minneapolis for decades,
yep.
since 1960 something or other. Whenever Target was created or formed, or whenever they had their headquarters, probably in the 70s or 80s, they had their headquarters. But for decades, they've had this massive high-rise building in downtown Minneapolis, and now it's closed. It's not even Target anymore. I mean, obviously, the building still stands, but it's yep. another one of these buildings that's gone vacant, like commercial office space vacancies. And the trend is clear. The trend is clear. And the one thing I want to point out, because I look at it like this. I try to pre-answer people's questions because a lot of people might hear this and think, oh, that sounds cool. Like that sounds like a cool lifestyle, but I can't really do that. You know, like, I mean, I got kids in school and, you know, I got stuff here.
Yeah, like other people in other countries don't have kids. Is that the idea?
Right. Like, exactly. Or, you know, I had a client recently tell me, well, I can't really do that because of my health insurance in California. I'm like, oh, buddy, yeah. Like, are you serious? Like, did you know there are doctors in other countries also? Like, and he goes, yeah, but I have my health insurance in California. I'm like, yeah, man, you're paying. Like, if you literally move to like Europe, for example, forget your California health insurance. Your health care cost is going to drop by like 80% if you just leave California. But some of these, like, I can't do it. I got kids in school. I can tell you that. You can either use your kids as an excuse to not go, or you can use your kids as a reason to go.
To go, for sure, yeah. Yeah.
Like, if you have kids, like, think of the opportunities and the experience these kids get when they get to live in multiple countries.
Oh, kids are a big excuse for people here in Canada. I'm hearing now, kids are a big excuse for people to leave. You know, maybe some parents don't agree with the educational system and the direction of the educational system in some countries, and they're opting. They're saying, I don't want my kids to go through this. I'm going to take them to a better country.
Yep. And like, I've lived in multiple countries with my kids, and now my kids all my kids have lived in, like,
how many kids you have, Bobby?
I have three. They're all grown now, but I have,
where do they live, in the US or they travel?
So my daughter lives in London. My oldest son lives in Alaska, and my youngest son he's literally like now, like finishing high school, like now. I think today may be his last day of school, of high school. And then he's got graduation in like 2 weeks. But he's finishing school now, and starting next month, he's going to be a digital nomad. He's starting his digital nomad journey. So like, him and I are going to go to Bulgaria for a few weeks.
I was just going to ask you, how does the family get together? I mean, if everybody's in different parts of the world, when do you guys see each other?
We meet up in different places. Like I met up with all of them, not April, I guess it was March. They all came down to Mexico. So yep. We hung out in Mexico for a while. Him and I are going to go to Bulgaria for a few weeks in June. Then we're going to do an RV trip around in the U.S. in July. August, I'm not sure yet. I'm definitely going to Europe. He may or may not come with me, depending on what he wants to do. I think him and I are going to go meet his sister in New Zealand and Australia in September. And then I think he'll stay with his sister. She's a singer, so she's on tour. So he'll stay with her on tour. And then I think him and I are going to meet up after that in Thailand for a while. Beautiful. Oh, this summer I'm also going to go visit my older son in Alaska. I'll go visit him for a while.
Oh, beautiful but, time I mean, this in the is, summer to go to Alaska, right? Weather's better.
Yeah, I visited him in the wintertime too, and it's not pleasant. He's in Fairbanks, which is way up there. But yeah, my kids have all lived in multiple countries. They all have two passports. They all have quite an experience of international life. And you'd have to ask them directly, but I know my daughter has told me before, like, Dad, I really appreciate you doing this for us because it gave me a different view on life. She said, wouldn't even have the career I have if I didn't have this experience and confidence to live in different countries. My son, my youngest is turning 18. Like in his mind, it's not even a thought. He's like, yeah, I'm going to travel the world when I graduate high school, obviously, you know, like in his mind, it's not even like, oh God, what am I going to do? Like
it's a family thing now, right?
Travel the world. Yeah. Like he doesn't even think twice about it. Like I could literally tell him like anything. He like, hey, let's go to Vietnam in August. Okay. Yeah. He doesn't care. Like it's just not even, like, it doesn't even trigger a negative response or a, like, he doesn't push back on it. But my point was, a lot of people will push back on it because they make excuses for things. And I'm not, like, one of my best friends in North Carolina, like, he doesn't travel at all. Like, for him, yep. like, a 3-hour drive to the beach is his biggest travel. And if that's your life, that's great. You don't want to travel? Don't. Like, do what you want. Like, it's 100%. It's traveling like I travel is definitely not for everyone. Like, this is definitely not going to be everyone's cup of tea. But if you want to do it, don't make excuses why you can't. Find the reasons why you can and should. Like, kids is an excellent reason to travel because they get to experience different cultures, different languages, like different people, see different things. They're going to build stories. Like, my kids will have stories they tell their grandkids about when we were in Finland over Christmas.
Such a life education.
Yeah. So don't make excuses for going. If you actually want to do it, don't make excuses. Find reasons.
Yeah, no, I'm dead set on leaving. So more conversation to come.
Yeah, guess what? Also, other countries also have schools. Ta-da!
Yeah, of course. They've got cars, and you can get driver's license. You can do anything you want.
Yeah, you can even drive cars in other countries. Oh my God, no way! Yeah, tell that to some of my family. I told one of my sisters. My birthday was earlier this week, and one of my sisters sent me like a birthday message, and she goes, "Where are you?" And I said, "I'm in Puerto Vallarta." And so she immediately sends me this news report about how dangerous it is in Puerto Vallarta and how the cartel is like murdering people on the streets and stuff. And I'm looking out my window going, yeah, I'm not seeing it. I mean, sure, people get murdered everywhere, I guess, but like, I have been places that felt dangerous. I have definitely been places where I'm like, I'm not going back here again. Like, this felt uncomfortable. Mexico is not one, at least the places I go in Mexico, it's not one of those places. But they do get a bad rap in the media, that's for sure.
Yeah. Well, I want to thank you so much for this conversation. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Robin. It's been great.
I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much. For the audience, thank you so much for joining us on this conversation. If you're watching us on YouTube, thanks for coming in on our channel and checking us out. I really appreciate that. And also, thank you for joining us on the podcast channel, which is all the podcast streaming platforms that you can think of were available. And I appreciate it for making us the world top five authentic conversation podcast out there. So not me saying that, that's your PR firm saying that. So thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. And I will see everybody at the next episode from all of us, from the audience and from me personally. I want to thank Bob Casey for joining me today, for putting the effort and being a guest on this channel. And I will see you guys at the next episode. Thank you, Bobby. Thank you.